NAPT programming support is provided in part by News from Indian Country. More than just a newspaper, News from Indian Country is in homes around the world, shared with friends and family, and archived for decades. IndianCountryNews.net.
Welcome to Producer Profiles, a production of Native American Public Telecommunications, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Here's NAPT production assistant Ben Kramer.
Maya Stark and Adi Levy are producers and directors of the new documentary, Sunkissed, airing on POV October 18th. The film follows the family of Dory and Yolanda Nez, who reside on the Navajo Reservation. Their children suffer from XP, a rare genetic disorder that causes a person to rapidly develop skin cancer and other ailments from any exposure to sunlight. Stark and Levy are native to Israel. Stark is an award-winning fiction and nonfiction film director and editor, having done work for the BBC, PBS, and the Sundance Channel. Levy is a documentary photographer who has worked with a range of international print publications, including Newsweek. Here is the interview from June 2012.
I'm Maya Stark, director, producer of Sunkissed.
I'm Adi Levy, and I'm one of the directors and producers of Sunkissed.
Sunkissed is about a Navajo couple, Dory and Yolanda Nez, who have two kids with this rare genetic disorder called XP. And XP basically means they can't be exposed to any sunlight. And they learned that even though XP is so rare in the general population, it's around one in a million, there are many other kids of XP on the reservation. And they go on this journey to find out why. They break down cultural taboos. They try to get to the bottom of it. They ask their elders if they know what the origin is. Ultimately, they find a link between XP and this event in Navajo history, which is called the Long Walk, which is the forced relocation of the Navajo people by the U.S. military. And it's that revelation that makes them redefine who they are.
The following is a soundbite of Yolanda from Sunkissed.
I always believed that the kids were sent to us for a reason. They were brought to us to teach us something. And that's for us to figure out why we were given two kids like this. Two kids with a rare genetic disorder, two kids with XP.
Why did you decide to make this film?
Well, I was working on a photography project in upstate New York. It's a camp for children with XP. It's a summer camp. And Dory and Yolanda came, and we really hit it off right away. And I was very intrigued by them from the beginning, and they told me a lot of really interesting facts about their lives on the reservation and their children and their history. And, you know, for the week we were there, that's all we spoke about. And we said we'd stay in touch. And when I got back to New York, I kept telling Maya about Dory and Yolanda and how interesting they are. And
what really caught our attention was the fact that they told her that they had heard that XP on their reservation, it might originate in their history. And that's when we thought that's a really interesting story, which has the potential of illuminating the long-lasting effects of colonialism on the Navajo tribe. And that's basically why we decided to write them an email and asked to join their journey of finding all these other families and unravel this link between XP and the Long Walk.
And how much time did you spend with the family?
For 4 years, we went between 3 to 7 times a year, 2-3 weeks each time.
Why has XP proven to be such an enigma on the Navajo reservation?
A lot of the families we met are traditional. They believe in traditional healing ways, or even if they were going to Western doctors, a lot of times the doctors didn't know how to diagnose XP. But you see this all over the country. XP is really rare, and there wasn't a lot of information about it up to the last 10 years. There's been much more awareness countrywide about XP, so it took the doctors a while to diagnose the children.
In the following soundbite from Sunkissed, Yolanda describes how she and Dory came to realize that something was very wrong with Leandra.
When Leandra was born, we had a picnic up in the mountain area. And she got burned, and her face was swelled up really bad, where it closed her eyes shut. We kept taking her to doctors, but no one knew exactly what was going on. Until one dermatologist confirmed the diagnosis of XP.
Something that we're really trying to do with the movie is first, which is really Yolanda and Dory's hope, is that this movie will spread the word of XP around the reservation, and it would create this community of XP families that then can advocate for certain things. And what's so unique about Yolanda's position is that she's been an advocate for kids with disabilities. That's her job. So she knows the right questions to ask, and she knows what to do in order to get the best care for her children. But other families, it takes such a long time before their kids are diagnosed. And in the meantime, you know, and this is something we did here on the reservation, that parents were literally persecuted by social services because doctors didn't know what it was. And they thought that the parents just hurt their children, that they burnt them, that they hurt them, that they abused their children. And so imagine being a parent to have a kid, and you see your kid getting more and more sick, and you don't know what to do, and you take him to the doctor, and the doctor blames you for it. And when I say doctor, I mean Western doctors. And at the same time, and this is something that Yolanda and Dory talked a lot about, was the tug-of-war struggle between Navajo traditional healing ways and Western medicine. And, you know, the Navajo traditional healing ways, I mean, even on that end, they didn't feel was really helping their children get better. You know, and that's what happens to all the families on the reservation. They sought out, you know, help from Western medicine, from their own traditional healing ways, but nobody could really help them figure out what was going on.
In the following soundbite from Sunkist, Dory explains how Navajo tradition places the blame for children's health problems on parents due to their actions from when they were younger.
When he took Leandra to the traditional medicine man, he brought back with a diagnosis saying that it was part my fault for the way my kids are, because I played with nature in ways that I shouldn't have played with it. You know, like burning ants with, you know, magnifying glasses, and that didn't work, so I burned them with gas. And I dug them up and tried to kill them that way, but unfortunately our traditional way says not to do that, you know. It's supposed to leave things alone in that way. You know, it's just what kids do, you know, and curiosity. And nobody was there to tell me no, no, no.
The long walk component was really interesting because none of the elders wanted to talk about it because it would be harmful if that topic was discussed. And so I'm curious if you think there will be any sort of stigma surrounding the film in the Navajo community, because you do really get into what happened during the long walk, which the elders did not want to talk about.
You know, this is something that we had to deal with a lot during the filming. It is obviously a very controversial issue on the reservation. And like you said, some people believe that the long walk should not be talked about. And it was very clear throughout the filming that there was a very strong sense of taboo around the long walk and this unwillingness to discuss this. But at the same time, there are many other people like Yolanda and Dory that do believe that the long walk should be discussed. You know, for them, it was so important to learn about this piece of history because they felt that they had learned something about themselves and why their children are the way they are.
Now, at one point in the film, shortly after Leandra has died, Dory, her father, is talking about life, and he talks about how killing a flower or killing a deer is inconsequential, but when a family member dies, it's overwhelming. And so this film, it really gets into some philosophical thinking about life and what life is about, what life means. And so for you two, how has working on this film and knowing the family changed the way that you think about your own existence and life around you?
Wow, that's a big one.
Something Maya and I kind of took in while shooting and spending time with Dora and Yolanda was the way they react and kind of take in events, really hard events in their lives. And they're so gentle and accepting.
I think it really made us humble. Just seeing them in light of everything that's happened to them. They lost their first child, and then they lost their second child. It really did put things in perspective for us. And it made us, you know, just spending time on the Navajo reservation and spending time, you know, in New Mexico and Arizona. We absolutely loved spending time there. You know, we both felt maybe for the first time in our life that we were closer to nature. That experience as well just kind of makes you humble and understand what your role is and how to take things in perspective.
And now to get a little bit into your media backgrounds, can you each tell me about your work prior to Sunkist?
I came out of film school in 2000, and I started working as an editor, both fiction projects and nonfiction projects. And slowly, slowly, I realized that I was really mostly interested in documentaries. The last documentary that I worked on was Wings of Defeat. It's kind of a new take on the whole kamikaze phenomenon, and it interviews surviving kamikaze pilots, which to me was an incredible experience to be working on this project. And Sunkist was really my first directorial debut.
I started school studying journalism, and I worked for various publications, and then I decided to focus on photography. I went back to school for photography, and I worked on a few documentary projects. One of them was Camp Sundown, where I met Dorian Yolanda. My next project was Sunkist.
What brought you to America in the first place?
I came to New York when I was 21. I had always known that I wanted to go to film school in New York ever since I was a child. You know, I thought I was going to stay here for 4 years, and that was already 16 years ago.
I actually grew up in the U.S. My family traveled back and forth between Israel and the United States for many years, so I came back to New York when I was 23. And when I met Dorian Yolanda, when I heard their story, I was actually dumbfounded that I did go through the American educational system, but it was pretty amazing to me that I've never encountered the long walk or any of this. So that was a huge shocker.
What was so interesting to me as an Israeli in the story of Dori and Yolanda is that we grow up in Israel learning about our own history, specifically the Holocaust, is something that is so important in Israel. And even as kids, we're being very much encouraged to have a very specific relationship to that history, you know, with sentences like, remember and never forget. And this is something that is being very much discussed in Israel and outside of Israel. And to see Dorian Yolanda, in light of the lack of any taught history for them, for me it was so interesting and inspiring in a sense to see them, first of all, learning about their history and then forming a specific relationship to that history and understanding who they are in light of what they had learned.
Can you speak more to the cross-cultural connection that formed between you two and Dorian Yolanda?
You know, Dori always introduced us to his family and friends as his Israeli sisters. And it says it all, really, because I think he basically let them know that we built this relationship of trust. And we had gotten very close to them. So that's the sisters part, but also the Israeli part was sort of like letting people know that, yes, you can speak freely. There's nothing that you cannot say. You know, this film starts with this rare gene, but it eventually becomes a film that talks about the impact of American colonialism. I think for them it was much easier to talk about certain things more freely because they knew we were not Americans.
You know, one of the conversations we would always talk about was Jewish history and, you know, how we dealt with the Holocaust and how, as a nation, how we're dealing with these issues. And we share somewhat of a history pattern. So it did make us closer and create more of a conversation.
It was also really intriguing for them to hear our take on dealing with trauma and dealing with traumatic events in your history and genetics. And cultural assimilation.
What are the thoughts in Israel about Native Americans? Is there an interest in Native American culture there?
You know, I have to tell you, this is something Adi and I thought for a long time. We thought, for the benefit of the film, that the European community is going to want to see the film and they're going to be really interested in this, because ultimately it is a story of colonialism, and it's a story about what happens to people 150 years later when they were colonized and assimilated. And we thought they would definitely take an interest in this. But as we've gone to this part of now distribution and trying to find sales agencies internationally, we actually have talked to a lot of people, and they said that sadly enough, and this is just from the TV broadcasting point of view, people outside the U.S. are not interested in Native American stories. And this was a shock to us. And I'm not saying some obscure sales agents told us that. It really is the people that know the industry very, very well, and they know the market very, very well. There's so many films out there now that have pure activist agenda, and our film is ultimately telling a very, very, very intimate story with a larger message. And we are sadly in a period of time in documentary filmmaking that if your film is not a pure activist film and raises very hot issues that everybody's dealing with today, it's a really, really, really hard film to sell. That's why we're so lucky and happy and privileged to have been picked up by POV and have the really generous help of NAPT, and have these two really amazing organizations really back us up and kind of rally for Sunkist.
That was Maya Stark and Adi Levy talking about their new documentary, Sunkist. Sunkist will air on POV October 18th. For a film trailer and more information about Sunkist, visit sunkistthefilm.com.
Support for this program was provided by Native American Public Telecommunications through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Interviews were conducted and edited by Ben Kramer, theme music written and performed by Jim Boyd. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of NEPT's Producer Profile.
Support for NEPT's Producer Profile is provided in part by IndianCountryTV.com. Producers of The Native News Update with anchors Paul Dumain and Kimberly Acosta.